This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about data protection, GDPR and privacy law. I'm here today with barrister Miss Melissa Stock from Normanton Chambers in London. Interestingly, Normanton Chambers was the first set of chambers in the UK to be named after a female barrister. Melissa is a specialist barrister in data protection and GDPR law, and she is certified by the International Association of Privacy Professionals in European Data Law. That's a mouthful. Thank you for joining us, Melissa.
Thank you.
So, data protection and GDPR law. The first question we're going to start with, Melissa, because I think all our listeners really want to understand this area from bottom up, is what is GDPR? What do the initials stand for? What does it mean?
The GDPR stands for the General Data Protection Regulation. It is a EU regulation which came into effect in May 2018, and it sets out the rules on how companies and organisations can use your data and your rights over the use of your personal data. The GDPR replaces the Data Protection Directive, and the reason for this is that the directive did not adequately cover the massive changes that have taken place in the past two decades about how our personal data is used, which has largely happened as a result of huge technological advances. So the GDPR introduced more rules for companies and organisations to ensure that individuals have better data protection. One of the most extraordinary changes that the GDPR brought is that it has extraterritorial effect. And what this means is that it applies to the use of personal data of EU citizens that takes place by companies and organisations outside of the EU as well.
Right. I mean, this is all very interesting because up until a couple of years ago, and you mentioned that this all came into play in 2018, I had never heard the term GDPR, and I am sure lots of people had never heard the term GDPR, and all of a sudden it's popping up on screens when you go to browse websites. It's popping up everywhere, it seems, in personal and in business life. So what is it we mean by personal data? Kind of what does that cover? What are we saying?
So personal data is defined in the GDPR as any information concerning an identified or identifiable natural person. And what exactly that means is that it's information that a living person is identified.
Name, yes, date of birth, exactly. The obvious. Address, exactly. Yeah, your personal data is actually, yes, your data, your information.
That you can be identified by. But right, it is given a wider definition than that in the directive, so that it now includes, and again, this is to take into account the massive technological changes that have happened, it also includes online identifiers and location data.
That's interesting, actually.
Exactly. So, for example, you're at home on your laptop. You have a IP address that's linked to that laptop. That is now that is included within the definition of personal data.
So that is personal to you, and that is protected. That kind of information, your IP address, is protected by the data protection law, is what
you're
saying.
Yes, because it has the potential to identify you. The same would apply to, you will have a unique ID identification code linked to your mobile phone.
Right.
And so all these sort of online identifiers,
Which there are many of,
aren't there? There really is so much more than just our name, your date of birth, your telephone number, your address. There are all these online avenues that are personal to us that most of us don't actually even think about. I mean, I really, apart from hearing it in the news here and there, never would have thought about my IP address. What's my IP address? Is that personal to me? I would have thought, well, actually, that belongs to the internet provider, perhaps. That's what I would have naturally gone down the road to think.
It's not so much how we think of it as ownership, but really it's going to identification.
Yes,
anything
it's
that identifies a living person. So, you know, some information that you give to organisations might identify you, but they might also identify someone else. Your address will identify you, but it may also identify your children if they have the same surname as you. It may be easy to identify them as well from that information. So when we think about personal data and who it applies to, it can be broader than that of what is originally thought.
Yes, because I mean, when you kind of hear data protection, we can't release this information because of data protection, and it usually happens at a time which can be quite annoying for someone trying to get information, and they say, well, we can't release that because of data protection. For example, we recently had a client who needed to access a recording because of an incident that happened in a certain retail store, and the retail store said, well, I'm very sorry, but we can't give you that recording because of data protection, because there's other people in that recording.
Yes.
So how would somebody, for example, would it have to be the police that would be able to say, we that's how we can access that information because it's protected? It's only a legal body.
It all depends on the exact circumstances, but organizations can also release data if they are able to de-identify others from it. So if there is a way of, and this is what I was going to go on to actually, I'll talk in a minute about the special categories of personal data, but data that is anonymized, that means somebody cannot be identified from it, is no longer personal data.
Right.
So once it's anonymized, it is no longer personal data, and the GDPR no longer applies.
Right, right.
So organisations can, and you know, where they can, they should anonymise personal data, so that these GDPR compliance does not arise.
And whoever's trying to get the information for the benefit of what they're doing,
yes,
potentially
possible.
Can have access. I mean, and I know that's a really big area, because I've certainly heard it so many times, you know, because of data protection, we can't give you this information, we can't discuss this information. Even when you call up and the water board or the electricity account to speak, and if it's in your partner's name, is your partner there to give us authorization? Because data protection means we can't speak to you if the account is in their name. That's usually quite a common area.
There are also special categories of personal data, and these are categories over which companies must take extra care, and they are a specific list, and they relate, and I will just list them so that you're aware. They are data relating to racial or ethnic origin, health or sex life, political opinions, religious or philosophical beliefs, trade union membership, sexual orientation, and genetic and biometric information.
So these headings that you've kindly just given to us are basically areas that companies have to assure your data is protected within those headings.
There has even more obligations,
yes,
compared with straightforward personal data.
Right, right. So we've already discussed that the GDPR law came into effect 25th of May 2018.
That's right, yes.
About that time. That's when I probably, as I said, it was about 2 years ago when I just started seeing the word GDPR everywhere. I mean, what rights do individuals have under GDPR? So if you feel that your privacy is being breached, or what are the headlines of the rights that are covered, you know, in layman's terms, so that we could try and remember this stuff? Because it's so broad, isn't it?
There are many rights, and in fact, the GDPR specifically introduced three new rights. I will just go through the rights in general, and then we'll talk about the new ones at the end. But the first is you have the right to be informed about what is being done with your data. The GDPR has increased what organisations must tell you, and they usually do this in a privacy notice or privacy policy just before
the
GDPR.
I must have clicked about a million of those already.
Yes,
because they and I mean. that's a bit of an area which I have a certain opinion on, because you're trying to browse a website or trying to look for information, and all of a sudden it's the first time you've gone onto that website, it pops up, accept our cookies, accept our proof.
Yes.
And no, does anybody go in to read this stuff? I mean, Melissa, don't you think that this is like a big area that's really everyone's being put into some sort of plug hole here, because nobody really thinks, oh, let me go and read their 30 pages of GDPR laws or whatever it is, and then I'll be able to go and access the information I want.
Well, I've read a funny statistic about that, saying that, you know, if you were to read every privacy policy of every service that you use, it would take 200 days or something like that. There are sort of arguments to say, and people have proposed, that rather than having, you know, changing the way that we look at data and changing the way that the law works, to say that rather than companies providing a privacy policy and telling you and you accepting, that actually individuals should have their own privacy policies and turn it the other way around, that companies have to accept.
So the computer that potentially that you're logging in from that identifies you, that's very interesting.
Now that's not a way of movement of the law that probably going to happen, but it's an interesting way of thinking about it, that maybe we should have more ownership over the way our data is used, and we should set the guidelines of what we are and are not willing to accept, because as you say, the flip side of it is that you have to understand perhaps a very complicated and difficult
area of law and policy.
But anyway, whether or not that happens, I don't know. The one reason that you are getting all these pop-ups when you go onto a website, and that's not an area that I think we were planning to discuss today, perhaps for another time, but that's cookie use. And often what organisations will do is whilst also getting your consent to use cookies, it's convenient for them to do it with the privacy policy as well, so that you have both. And they are two separate regimes. Cookies doesn't come under the GDPR.
Cover cookies in a further podcast.
That is something separate. So those pop-ups that you see are something different.
Okay, so then we move on to the right of access.
Oh, yes, sorry, the right of access, yes. So you can, as you could before, you can make what is called a data subject access request to a company or organisation to find out what personal data they hold and what they're doing with it.
Of you,
that's right. You have the right to object to your personal data being processed, but there are certain conditions that need to be satisfied. There's quite a few, so I'm not going to go that into detail, but just to understand that this is not an automatic right. The only exception to that is with direct marketing, and the GDPR does give you an automatic right to object.
To say, I don't want any direct marketing. I mean, goodness knows, I think I've clicked on another million of those and I still get the marketing. I don't know how they get through, but they seem to somehow get through.
So that is something that, you know, is sort of automatic. You have the right to have your data corrected. That's nothing new. And then the GDPR has introduced some new rights, three specifically. The first is the right to erasure. Now, this
to
again,
be forgotten.
Yes, I mean, it's
that's huge. Google, there was big news on that with Google, wasn't
that's
there?
That's right.
There was people saying, look, I don't want my old information coming up when people put in my name or put something in to do with me.
The right to be forgotten is referenced in the GDPR in relation to the right to erasure, but it's sort of two separate things. I'm not going to discuss that today. Perhaps we could do that another time, because that's quite substantial. But to understand the right to erasure, there are a list of circumstances when the right can be used. It's not automatic. But one interesting and I think important inclusion in the list is that you can request that the data that was collected during your childhood is erased. And this is important for reasons of public policy. It permits individuals to delete data that was given either by themselves or another person at a time when they perhaps did not fully understand the risks or simply did not have a say in the matter. And that is one of the reasons that right to erasure came about.
Right. Well, I mean, because absolutely, we're now in the age where our children are using the internet, and people in their early 30s probably grew up with the internet. So therefore, you know, you may have very easily used the internet in a way as a child, or your friends may have, or your family may have, and included you in that, that you wouldn't have chosen, you wouldn't really choose to do as an adult, and you don't really want that information being bandied about. Now, that's all very interesting, and yes, no, I agree.
There's two more new rights. The second is slightly odd. It's the ability to restrict processing. But that is just, let's say you have an issue and you've contacted an organisation and you're contesting something, either the accuracy or the basis on which they're using your data. But you don't want them to delete your data. You just want them to stop doing what they're doing with it while you sort it all out. So that's sort of, it's a right, but it's actually more of a mechanism that's quite useful. I think that's, it's labelled a right, but I'm not sure if it's sort of seen that way. And so you can just say, please don't delete it while we sort this out. Could you just restrict it? The third new right is data portability. Again, there are caveats, but in essence, this means that individuals can receive data in a machine-readable format. The data must have been provided at the outset to the organisation, and it has to be processed by automated means. But what this means is this right was introduced to give people choice in online services, and it prevents them being locked in by a service provider on the basis of, you know, some sort of technical issue. They can say, well, you know, I've loaded up whatever information, let's say photographs on a platform, and I want that shifted to another platform. You know, you have the right to get that downloaded in a way that you can then transfer it across. So it just stops you being locked in because of some technical problems.
I mean, this is all, I mean, it's really not simple stuff to comprehend for the average person, I have to say, and certainly I struggle with it a little bit. But if, for example, a company has your information in a certain way, because I personally have heard this as well, where they say, well, it's automated. And you say, but I don't want that. I don't want to receive this information from you in this way. And they said, but it's all automated. That's part of what we're saying here in terms of, I don't really want it.
Not necessarily. I don't think that the right gives you control in that way. It's more in terms of competition. You know, if you want to use one platform to do something, you change your mind, you want to use another platform, how do you transfer all your data across to the next other, to another platform?
Right.
So it's not you can't really dictate sort of how a company communicates with you per se. I mean, you can say, I don't want to receive emails, or
yes,
it's direct marketing, things like that.
Or,
you know, I prefer whatever you communicate with me by mail or whatever it may be. But the right to data portability, it just means it stops you leaving us. It's to prevent the situation where you can't leave a service that you want to leave,
right,
and move
right.
in,
and
because you're locked in.
For example, mobile phones. You've got the Apple, then you've got the Android and the smartphone, and the different platforms are being used. Information
yes.
is stored in different ways. I mean, it's not really that easy for that to understand this stuff, you know, and to comprehend it as well.
No, I think it is difficult. And I think often, you know, the idea of having to spend so much time trying to work it out, it's just easier to stay with,
yes.
provided that you're with.
Yes. I mean, because, okay, so we've gone through some headings.
There's just one more thing that I'd like to say, and this is not considered it's not part of the new rights, but it is something that the GDPR has introduced. It addresses a phenomenon that the directive didn't take into account, and that is the use of data to profile individuals. So the GDPR has certain rules regarding automated data collection that is used to profile people to analyse or predict their personal aspects. So, for example, personal data that may be collected and used to assess your performance at work or your health or your financial situation to make decisions. So you have the right not to have your data processed by automated means where it is used to evaluate you, but it has to have significant or legal consequences. There are caveats.
What's an example of that, Melissa? Give
us as simple
as you can.
An online application for a job that you
right.
put in all your details and all your background and so forth, and the list of candidates to be interviewed is done all purely by machine. So the machine or algorithm or whatever comes up with...
Algorithms, a big word in this
A decision.
Decade, yes.
So you have the right to say, well, I want a human being to look at that as well. I want, you know, it to be assessed.
But
so you can't say no, but you can...
Realistically, what's the chance of that happening? I think it's very slim that somebody will turn up to a potential employer and say, I don't want you to process my information through your automated systems that make it very quick for you to do so, hence less potential overhead of staff because you've got the machines doing it, and I would like you to look at me personally, a human being to look at me on a personal level and assess my data that way, and the potential employer saying, oh yes, of course we'll do that. I mean, it's very slim that will happen, isn't it?
It's
really
slim, but the GDPR provides for it.
Yes,
so
I get
that
it.
If you, you know, ask what the process is and is explained to you.
You probably look like a troublemaker from day one. You know, well, hold on a moment. You're applying for the job. How dare you?
Companies
tell us
ought to, you know, are obliged to put those safeguards into place without the individual having to do anything, and that comes within one of the responsibilities that the GDPR as it put onto organizations. And one of those is something called data protection by design and default. And this means that when companies and organizations are designing a product or creating a system that uses data, that data protection is incorporated at the outset, so before any data is processed, and that a person does not have to take active steps to maximize the privacy and the use of that product or system, that by default it is at...
It gives the end user the protection from the beginning. Okay. I mean, okay, so let's just ask a very simple question here. You think that somebody's breaching your GDPR rights, breaking the law with regards to your personal data. What do you do about it? What's the first thing? I mean, I know it depends. And let's just assume it's a company. It's a big corporate company. They're using your data in a way which you are not happy with. You've asked them to stop. They're not stopping.
Well, the first protocol is to go to the organisation and find out what exactly they're doing. If you know they are breaching your data...
And you have proof of some sort.
Then you really aren't... It's not a subject access request. You're not calling them up and asking them to explain to you how they're using your data. You are informing them that you believe there is a data breach and they will need to investigate that. They then will have to report any data breach. They're obliged to report that to the supervisory authority, which here in the UK is the Information Commissioner's Office, the ICO. And the ICO will then investigate it.
Right, so they have to automatically...
They have 72 hours once they're aware.
Report your complaint.
Not necessarily. They automatically have to report a data breach.
Right.
So if they have investigated your complaint, whatever you say you've been breached...
And found that, yes, we have, as a company, breached...
Then they have to report that to the ICO.
Right.
Let's say you... contact this organisation, you say there's a data breach, they say there isn't a data breach, you can then yourself contact the ICO and say, you know, I believe my data rights have been breached.
But that's the information...
The Information Commissioner's Office, and they can then investigate it. But the one thing that's important to understand about the ICO is that it is there to investigate organisations and how they use your data, and they have certain powers. They can go into offices and check what's happening. They can levy fines. They can do all sorts of things. But what they won't do is they won't award you as an individual compensation for a breach. So if
they will levy the fines on the companies, they will put the companies right about it and things
yes.
like that. But they won't pay you out a compensation
yes.
of saying, oh yes, it has been breached and here's your compensation for that.
Yes, so I mean, you as an individual, if you wanted compensation, you would have to seek a remedy in court. A court can make orders to ensure data rights are enforced as well, so they can say, you know, stop processing the data in that way or whatever it may be that you want them to be done, and they can also award compensation. So the ICO, the one thing that the GDPR really changed was the amount of money that the ICO could fine companies who breached their data protection obligations. Under the GDPR, it was increased dramatically so that they can levy fines of up to 4% of a company's global turnover or 20 million euros, whichever is the greater.
4% of the annual turnover of a company could be levied as a fine if they're found to breach. Because you read it in the news where you say there's been a leak in the customer's personal data. There's been quite a few large companies actually that have had that problem where it's not really been leaked. I guess it's been breached.
There's been an attack, let's say a cyber attack.
Yes, and it's been allowed to be taken. Your personal data has gone out there and that company could be fined.
They could be fined if the ICO finds that leak happened as a result of the company not doing what it should do to protect that data.
Right,
if
see.
That breach happens, you know, there was no way that the company could have stopped that malware attack, whatever it was, that their, you know, IT security measures were at their best. There was nothing more that they could do. Then the ICO, you know, won't automatically fine them just because a breach, some sort of data leak
right.
has happened.
That's interesting.
But in often there has been something that could have been done
better.
And that is why. And the level of fines, you know, it won't automatically go up to the maximum 4%. It will depend on, you know, how much could they have done, what exactly were the shortfall.
And there'll be detailed
failings
into
the arrangements. Yeah, you know, how bad were they, really? Were they sort of, there's a bit more that can be done, or a lot more that could have been done? And those fines will vary. I'm sure everyone's been, you know, heard about and read about the British Airways data leak that happened in 2018, and cyber criminals managed to get the credit card details of about 500,000 passengers in 2018. So this is when the GDPR applied. The ICO investigated and concluded that the airline's security arrangements were not good enough, and it says it intends to fine BA £183 million.
Goodness,
which
where
represents
does that money go? Does it go into the ICO to fund?
It goes into the government. Yeah,
right.
Government funds.
That's a lot of
but
money.
But that amount of that represents 1.5% of BA's global turnover.
At
in
that
the
time,
previous
probably.
Year.
Right.
So
right.
It's not up to the full whack of the 4%, but it just gives you an idea of sort of where they're being pitched at the moment. And there's a few other investigations. I mean, since the GDPR came into effect, there have been investigations, not just in the UK, this is across where all the GDPR applies, to about 206,000 cases.
Oh my goodness
gracious.
According
to the European Data Protection Board. So there have been a lot of cases, a lot of investigations as a result of the GDPR.
Because everyone seems to be taking this seriously. It's not just the UK, it's the Europe, and then it's global, larger, the wider casting net around that as well. I mean, and this is what we're running out of time, so I just want to just quickly try and get in the top end of Brexit affecting GDPR. I mean, GDPR, it was put together to protect our data in the UK and Europe.
Yes.
So what are we looking at here? Because this is all now going to change again. What does it mean? Is GDPR, do you think GDPR will no longer exist because it has to be rewritten to protect us as the UK?
Well, it's going to get very, very, very complicated. So when the GDPR took effect, the UK government passed the Data Protection Act 2018, which incorporated the GDPR into our law. So when we leave at the end of this month, we have the new withdrawal agreement, which means that...
end of January, because we will
exactly.
put this out probably February, March.
End of January. Yes. The transfer of personal data continues. It's sort of the withdrawal agreements allow us things to remain as they are until the end of 2020. There is what's called the Data Protection Privacy Electronic Communications, EU Exit Regulations, it's nice and short, that'll come into effect. And what that does is it redefines the data protection landscape into two separate frameworks, the EU GDPR and the UK
right.
GDPR. And it makes hundreds of changes to the Data Protection Act.
As we know, it is one global
yes.
GDPR.
Now, listeners will be relieved to hear that I'm not going to go into these hundreds of differences, but I do mention it just to highlight, really, how complex data protection is going to become. I mean, there are two viewpoints on Brexit. So one is for businesses and the second for consumers.
Yes.
For businesses, it becomes very complicated and is likely to increase their costs. I think that's probably a separate podcast to go into all that. But from a point of view of consumer or an individual person in the UK in regards to their data, Brexit isn't necessarily going to be a direct problem, other than it might lead to increased costs across our economy as businesses adapt. These are the sorts of issues that you're going to read about in
newspapers.
So
we're not going to all of a sudden lose the protection because we're out of the EU and the laws haven't been rewritten yet to protect us while we're in the UK. There are, up until 2020, the GDPR will be in place, and then following that, in loose terms, there'll be a
there'll
separate
be a type
data
of
protection
exactly.
for the UK and then yes. separate for the EU.
Yes. Exactly.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that nicely touches on that. And I have to say, I do feel like we can really lengthen each question by about 10 minutes because there are, it really is a technical area of law, isn't it? And it's a shame that we don't have enough time in our daily lives to understand it more. But it does feel a little bit bland to the everyday person. It feels like a big task to try to understand it try to keep up with it.
The regulations, it's complicated. But I think when we look at it in real life examples of the type, when we look at the investigations that are taking place, Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, Google,
yes.
When you actually look at the cases, I think it's a lot more, it's easier to understand because yes. then you can unpick and see, how does it
and
actually affect
specific
me
examples
as an individual.
Of yes. what's happened, why it happened,
exactly.
and what was done about it. No, this has been incredibly useful, Melissa. Thank you ever so much for your time. Don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.